60, anything will do. We appreciate all of your help and all of the support that you've been giving us during this drive. Help us end it. We're almost there. We can see the finish line in the distance, but we need to get there. We can get there quicker with your help. So please call 845-482-4141 and show your support for the national news that you just heard and now the locally produced information, news, and entertainment that you're going to hear. We've got Radio Chatskill coming up next at 10, and then we've got the rest of our locally produced programming, Farm and Country. And then it's going to be a live version of Catskill Character with Donna Fellenberg. We've got Janice Adams' show at noon and Josh Fox at 1. Then, of course, it's Jambalaya at 2 and Now and Then at 3. So all locally produced news and entertainment. So show your support of that right now on your weekend, on your Saturday. As we are ending our fun drive today, call 845-482-4141. Be a part of the community of listeners that supports public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania, WJFF Jeffersonville. We are Radio Catskill.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Taliban continue to make major advances across Afghanistan. The militant group captured the country's second and third largest cities on Friday. As Lynn O'Donnell reports, Taliban fighters are now closing in on the capital, Kabul.
The latest reports put the number of provincial capitals to have fallen at 18. This means probably more than two-thirds of the country is now under Taliban control. You're right, they are very, very close to Kabul, and the conditions here are deteriorating by the hour as people are flooding into the capital from all parts of the country to escape.
That's Lynn O'Donnell reporting from Kabul. U.S. forces are arriving in the city to help speed up the evacuation of the U.S. embassy. Roughly 3,000 troops are expected to be in place by the end of the weekend. A federal judge in El Paso has extended a temporary restraining order blocking the governor of Texas from restricting migrant travel in the state. Angela Kochurga of member station KTEP reports the U.S. Justice Department had sued for interfering with federal immigration law.
During a hearing in federal court in El Paso, the Department of Justice attorney argued the state of Texas has no authority to impose its own immigration laws and told the court the state would impede federal contractors transporting migrants in custody and nonprofit groups providing services for migrants who are released to await their immigration hearings. Attorneys for the state told the judge Texas is dealing with a major public health crisis and COVID is skyrocketing at the border because of migrants. Most doctors and public health experts say there's little evidence of that. The temporary restraining order first took effect August 3rd. I'm Angela Kochurga in El Paso.
Tech giant Apple says it's planning to add more protections to a new feature that will scan iPhones and other devices for child pornography. NPR's Bobby Allen reports critics have accused the company of creating a backdoor into users' personal information.
Apple says a new child safety tool that scans iPhone images stored in the cloud for child sex abuse and other exploitative material will have new safeguards, including allowing human rights groups to audit the system and not reporting images to authorities until 30 images are found. The changes come in the wake of privacy and security experts calling on Apple to drop the plan completely, saying it's opening the door to surveillance by governments or manipulation by bad actors. Apple, which is among NPR's financial supporters, says the goal is to help law enforcement catch predators who spread child porn online. The company says the photo scanning technology is encrypted and only detects known images of abuse. Bobby Allen, NPR News, San Francisco.
This is NPR News.
I'm Richard Harris. I've been a science correspondent at NPR since 1986, believe it or not. There's so much just fascinating about the world around us, and science shines a light on it. Surprises are sort of baked into what I do. We don't know what's happening all the time, and we shouldn't pretend we do. And that's a constant reminder, don't assume you know what's going to happen next, because you could well be wrong. And I think that's the most important service that NPR provides. We work very hard to make sure that we tell people things that are correct and that are accurate, a sense of what is true and what is not true, since there's so much misinformation out there mixed in with true information. I absolutely donate to my local station, and I have for more than 30 years. And in fact, this year I gave more because I know the need was much higher. Bringing you this journalism is so important, especially right now. Here's how to give.
Go to WJFFradio.org or call 845-482-4141 and give what you can. Help end our summer fun drive.
We can end it today. We will end it today with your support. So, yes, please call now, 845-482-4141, and donate to end the drive. And donate now, and your donation will be doubled. We have a $250 challenge, and that's from the Casco family, and they will give us that $250 if we raise $250. So let's do it now. Let's get that $500 total on to the tally, and we'll be on our way, and we're ending the drive later today. You can support us, support the journalism that you're hearing from NPR and the journalism you're about to hear from our locally produced talk and entertainment programming, 845-482-4141.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and Jarl and Pamela Moan, thanking the people who make public radio great every day, and also those who listen.
From WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On the show today, we'll be talking to folks about several issues, as we always do. But first, businesses large and small, from McDonald's and Home Depot to local yoga studios, are reinstituting mask mandates as U.S. coronavirus cases rise. Bars, gyms, and restaurants across the country are requiring vaccines to get inside in some places. After a largely mask-free summer, it's a reversal no one wanted to see, brought on by the fast-spreading Delta variant and the new guidance from CDC. But business owners and workers say they will do what they can to keep their doors open and not slow the economic gains of the last few months and keep their communities safe. That includes Lauren Sicali, owner of the Jeffersonville Bake Shop. We should note the Bake Shop and other Main Street businesses owned by Sicali are among Radio Catskill's financial supporters. Was this a hard decision for you to make as a business owner?
Yeah, it was. It's been one that we've been thinking about for a while. So I know it may seem to people like it, you know, it just happened all of a sudden, but it's something that we've been going back and forth on, maybe all summer actually. But ultimately we decided, that, you know, we followed the news very carefully. And we saw cases going up, not down, following the news on the Delta variants, following the news on how many people are getting vaccinated in our area and how many people are not. And, you know, we just decided that requiring masks was just not that much of an ask, in our opinion. It's, you know, it's one thing. There's, I think, areas or places that will require you know, proof of vaccination, for people to enter. For us, just having people wear a mask, is sort of the simplest thing to do that people can do just to keep everybody safe. And our customers, a large number of our customers are, older. And they come in every day. They hang out inside and outside. And, you know, this is for our employees. This is for us. This is for all our customers, but this is mostly for them. And just keeping them safe and allowing people to still have a place to come to and enjoy and meet their friends. But being able to come in and know that we're taking precautions to keep them safe. So that's kind of where that came from.
And after a largely mask-free summer, it's probably a reversal that nobody wanted to see, let alone the businesses. What's the feedback been from customers?
You know, we've had, our social media gal posted it online, and it's on this Facebook and Instagram posts that we've been seeing the most feedback. We haven't really had at least that I'm aware of, we haven't really had any feedback in the store. But I was just surprised to see the feedback online and how angry some people were and how thankful some people were. I mean, really, it really does seem to mirror the national sentiment about masks and this whole thing and how COVID just really gets political. But yeah, we had some customers who were very angry that we were now requiring masks, and they were vocal on social media saying that they would never come to the bake shop again, or that, I mean, it really ran the gamut of what people were angry about. But I would say for the same number of people that were angry and promised that we would never receive their business again, we had the same number of people saying how thankful they were grateful for our, you know, leadership and just taking the lead on this, because I don't think that there are many places in the area that are requiring masks to come in, but it may start happening as we hit the fall. So I guess people are just seeing this as, you know, taking a little preemptive initiative in our area.
Do you think that people are confused because of the shifting nature of guidelines from CDC, from the state level, and then businesses are not consistent with their mandates, some mandating for employees and not customers, and others mask mandates for all? Do you think that that's a confusion and maybe leading to some of the aggravation on some parts?
I guess so. I hadn't thought about it in that way, that it can be confusing. The way I've sort of seen our community, what I've seen over the summer is that even when the state dropped mandates, people were still choosing whether or not to wear masks, depending on what was best for them. Just to be completely honest, I sometimes forget, there are certain situations where I really want to wear a mask, especially when I'm indoors and around a lot of people. And then, you know, I go outside and I take my mask off, and then I mean, anybody that's seen me in Jeffersonville on Main Street knows that I'm like constantly running in and out, up and down Main Street. And so the mask on, mask off thing is a very real thing. And sometimes I find myself inside, running around doing something, and I've forgotten to put my mask on. So I completely understand that this is not, this isn't easy, but I guess I feel like we should be at a point now where, you know, you've got a mask in your back pocket or in your purse, and then you can put it on when the situation requires it. And I just hope that that's where we all are, just for the ease and safety of everybody. I do understand that it can be confusing, but I just feel like it's an easy enough thing to do. It's not about requiring the vaccine, which is a much, much more difficult conversation to have. But to me, the mask is just a super simple solution.
Do you think that having this mask mandate for your business will help you and other businesses stay open and avoid being locked down again? I mean, you can't really predict it.
Right. So I do hope that we're doing our part in lowering the spread or mitigating the spread. I haven't even thought about whether shutdowns are coming again. I mean, I can't even really think past, you know, today. But just because there's still so much going on and so many little things to take care of on a day-to-day basis that you know, regarding all of this, whether it's, still encouraging some of our employees to get vaccinated, and just keeping up on all the little stuff. So I haven't thought so long term as to whether or not we're going to be shut down. But now that since you mention it, I do feel like whenever I put my mask on, I feel like I'm asking, you know, my kids to do it and my staff to do it. I just feel like we are mitigating any spread that might happen. So to the extent that we can do that, yes, we can stay open longer. And we can keep people healthy longer and, you know, do our part just in this little area to make sure that people aren't getting sick.
The region, Sullivan, Orange, Wayne, and Pike counties are all at either high or substantial risk of community spread. So it is practical. You know, next month, New York City is going to start requiring vaccinations to enter restaurants, bars, and theaters. Have you thought about even that possibility?
Yeah. Yes, we thought about it. It seems a little extreme right now, but I do see that that's unfortunately where we're going. I guess what I'm hoping to do is do enough work up here so that that doesn't become our reality. But just doing enough up here to get people to at least understand that if they're not going to get vaccinated, that, you know, having a mask on and social distancing is also effective. You know, I was on I'm on a listserv up here where people in our area, you know, share information. And there's a woman in our town who got vaccinated but caught COVID twice, and the second time was deadly for her. I mean, she almost didn't survive it. Those stories just really stick with me. And while, you know, it's, I haven't gotten it personally, but I have been vaccinated. I read those stories and I'm reminded about how careful I really need to be. I mean, there are some times where I'll see friends on the street and I don't have my mask on and it doesn't occur to me to put it on. And, and then I find out later that they'll call me and say, you know, it turns out I was near someone who was diagnosed with COVID. And, I don't want to fall into a malaise. I think the malaise is why we've all gotten, you know, why this progress that we made during shutdown and everything has kind of retreated. So I just think it's important to sort of stay on top of it and take it seriously. And as sad and depressing and as the news is, I think we all need to still stay on top of it. I mean, believe me, I don't like having to, you know, read all of these stories. It's horrifying. It's maddening. But I feel like it's our duty to kind of, stay on top of what's actually going on, what the reports are that are coming out. I get alerts on my phone every day about the number of cases that we get, and it's rising. It's not falling. So I just feel like it's our duty, you know, especially in Jeffersonville, where we have so many people coming in and out every day of our businesses, to make sure that we are on top of it and reminding people that when we're all together, we still have to be careful. I hope that means that we can, I hope we can do it in a way that keeps us all open.
Thank you for talking to us, Lauren, and thank you for caring about the community in this way and your business and your employees.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for asking me to do the spot. I think it's incredibly important that everybody mask up and stay safe. Thanks, Tim.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's our summer fund drive, and we're looking for your support today, the last day of the fund drive. So please call 845-482-4141 or donate online, wjffradio.org. We have a $250 challenge right now from the Caskill family. So if we meet that, we will double and put that on the tally toward our end goal and end the drive later today. Or even sooner, with your support, call 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org online to help end the drive. The New York State Assembly will suspend its investigation of Governor Andrew Cuomo once he steps down after its leader concluded the legislature didn't have the clear authority to impeach a departed official. That's according to the chamber's top Democrat yesterday. Cuomo announced Tuesday he planned to resign over sexual harassment allegations as it became clear he was almost certain to be impeached by the legislature. He had his resignation, he's handed in his resignation, and at which point he'll be replaced by Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul. Some lawmakers urged the assembly to press on with the impeachment proceeding, but Assembly Speaker Carl Heste said Friday that lawyers had advised the body's Judiciary Committee that the state constitution doesn't authorize the legislature to impeach an elected official no longer in office. As part of Radio Catskill's continuing coverage of the Cuomo resignation, we've been speaking with local officials, including former New York State Senator Jen Metzger. Here's what she told us about Cuomo's resignation.
Well, my initial thought is, hallelujah, he's resigned. I mean, it was the, you know, the report, I thought the attorney general and her team did a fantastic job. It was thorough. It was strong. It was independent. And it was really clear. You know, he's had a long record of, there's just been a culture of abuse, sexual harassment, and really violated his own sexual harassment laws that he signed into law, there was just no choice there. He needed to resign, and I think that Kathy Hochul, I've met her on a number of occasions when I was in the state Senate. I think she's going to be just set an entirely different tone for that office. Just, I mean, as a person, she's a kind of a more collaborative, more down-to-earth person, straight shooter. There was all of the sexual harassment and all of that horror under Cuomo. But, you know, he was also just horrible to work with, very difficult to work with. And it was, everyone always felt basically that they were working in a threatening situation. So I think it's just going to be really different for the legislature and for New Yorkers now. And I think everyone's kind of breathing a sigh of relief.
I almost been feeling like that the administration's been MIA in certain ways as he's been laying low, avoiding the controversy, I assume, and not really getting into issues. Do you think this will change anything on the ground pretty quickly in the coming weeks and months?
Right. Well, I mean, he's, you know, they have 14 days. So, you know, I think our acting governor is working on the transition now. She is going to kind of clear out the second floor, as we referred to it, you know, the executive office, and put in new staff. But the, you know, I expect the heads of eight agencies and departments, you know, are not going to change, just sort of the immediate circle of staff in the governor's office on the second floor. It was extremely worrisome from a governing perspective to have this huge distraction, and, you know, with the Delta variant raging, and, there's a lot of concerns continued concerns, mounting concerns about, you know, where we're heading with COVID again. And it's, you know, going to be important to, like, shift gears and, you know, really focus on, in that office. So, you know, I imagine she will, you know, get right to work when she's in there.
It sounds like Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul comes from a more moderate form of the Democrat Party and upstate kind of Democrats. Do you think she'll be able to work with the more left-leaning base that's out there in New York?
Yeah, I think she, you know, there's, of course, a lot of unknowns. But first of all, I think it is a good thing that in some ways that she understands rural communities. And, you know, that was something that I found, you know, as this Democratic senator representing the most rural district, you know, it was very frustrating. When I was in the Senate, it seemed like the governor really had very little understanding of the needs of rural communities. So I actually think that, you know, that's a positive thing. And, you know, in terms of, you know, she was definitely sort of more conservative on some issues like in the environmental realm. You know, she was, you know, took some votes when she was in Congress that were, you know, pretty pro fossil fuels. You know, she has been representing the state these years. And my understanding is she has gotten a more of a statewide perspective, but rather than being sort of narrowly district focused as she had been in the past. But we'll have to see. I mean, the other thing is she is, you know, she's announced that she plans to, you know, run in 2022 for this office. And she's going to need, you know, to work with Democrats, you know, all over the state and especially downstate because they, you know, New York City has a very big influence on statewide elections. So, you know, I think there's a political incentive there as well.
That is former New York State Senator Jen Metzger speaking to Jason Dole during the local edition about Governor Cuomo's resignation this week. And we also spoke with elected officials, Senator Mike Martucci, who defeated Metzger in the last election, and Aileen Gunther, New York State Assemblywoman, and as part of our continuing coverage of the Cuomo resignation. If you appreciate that type of coverage, that local perspective on these state issues, national issues even, well, support us. Give us a call during our summer fund drive, 845-482-4141. Make a donation of any amount, and that will help us end the drive. It's the last day of our Summer of Love fund drive. So show the love, share the love, call 845-482-4141, or donate online, wjffradio.org. Set it slow so you can type it in. We have a $250 challenge right now from the Casco family. Help us get that challenge. Donate now. 845-482-4141.
Hi, Lynn. Tell us what you like about summer.
I love being up in the Catskills. I love the deer. I love the people, the wildlife, the ferns, the river. I just love it up here.
You're familiar with Radio Catskill?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Tell us what your favorite programs are.
From NPR in general, definitely be Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
If you love Radio Catskill, show your love. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Show the love. Call us 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org as we're ending our drive today. You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and Leif Johansson is one of our volunteers, one of our podcasters. His podcast, Close to Home, is at WJFFradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And you know what Leif loves? He loves policy and administrative divisions in the United States. Maybe a few weeks ago, you heard his excerpt from the podcast about all the bizarre administrative divisions in the United States that declare what a town is, what a county is, what a city is. Local government is kind of convoluted. Who would have figured, right? Well, we have another excerpt of that podcast where he's talking about villages. You know, we have villages all over the area. If you've ever wondered what constitute a village, well, Leif has the answer. It's part of his podcast on WJFFradio.org called Close to Home.
Below towns, we have 556 villages in New York. We can basically think of villages as miniature cities, except they exist within towns, so they are a more local administrative division than towns. The other key difference between villages and cities in New York is related to their legal framework. Almost all villages in New York have to follow a uniform statewide village law that dictates how they can operate. For example, they have to have a mayor and a village board, and they have to maintain certain local infrastructure. They have to manage tax collection, fire departments, cemeteries, and sidewalks in certain ways. Cities, on the other hand, are far more autonomous in that, for the most part, they get to create their own set of laws and regulations to operate under. So different cities often function completely uniquely from one another, while most villages have a more one-size-fits-all charter established by the state. And in terms of population, even though communities must have 500 residents to incorporate as a village, there is no upper population limit on villages in New York. So the village of Hempstead, which is inside the town of Hempstead that I mentioned a minute ago, has a population of 55,000 people, which is larger than most cities in New York. Finally, below villages, things get a little less clear-cut. Because if an area isn't chartered as a village or a city, it's just an unincorporated place, no matter how many people live there. You might know these types of places as hamlets, but there's actually no legal basis for that. The term hamlet is never defined in New York State law. It's just a colloquial word that we use to refer to, in the words of the Oxford English Dictionary, a small settlement generally smaller than a village. But there's not much evidence that that's the case in New York. The impetus for incorporating as a village, or for that matter, choosing to remain an unincorporated place, isn't necessarily related to the population of the settlement at all. Here in Sullivan County, if we were to set Monticello and Liberty to the side, as these are the major population centers of the county, the average population of the remaining villages is 30% less than the average population of the unincorporated places in our county. The village of Jeffersonville, for example, has 369 residents in it, according to 2019 statistics, while the hamlet of South Fallsburg has about 2,500 people. So why would a place decide to incorporate or not? Well, when I asked county historian John Conway about this as well, he said it's just a matter of a group of people at some point in our county's several hundred-year history deciding to do it, and to have governance and municipal services that are unique from the towns. In reading into some specific historical examples, it's often based in local politics and personal disagreement about how a community should be run. And it can go the other way, too. In 1977, the village of Rosendale in Ulster County disincorporated and merged its services with the town of Rosendale, because of a slew of mismanaged finances and utilities in the village that resulted in the local water and sewage systems essentially falling apart, with not nearly enough tax revenue to fix them and make it safe to drink the local water again. And in an ironic twist, after years of infighting and emotional turmoil about whether to abandon Rosendale's status as a village, the state and federal government stepped in right after the village finalized its disincorporation and fully funded a new water and sewage system for the hamlet, thus mitigating the very reasons the village disincorporated in the first place. It's also worth mentioning that even though New York State hamlets aren't strictly real in a legal sense, they are recognized as, quote, census-designated places, which the U.S. Census Bureau defines as a statistical entity, legal mumbo-jumbo, comprising a densely settled concentration of population that is not a part of a city or a village, but is locally identified by a name. So if people call a place by a name and people live in that place, it's officially a census-designated place, and it's usually marked with its own U.S. post office. And if all that, from counties to cities to towns to villages to fake hamlets and census-designated places, isn't confusing enough, we have a trove of even smaller administrative divisions in the U.S., including library districts, fire districts, school districts, lake protection and rehabilitation districts, and several more that are unique from state to state. So oftentimes, if a complete stranger were to tell you what administrative districts they lived in, from state all the way down to the triangulation between fire, school, and library district, each of which, by the way, come with their own tax codes, there is a solid chance that you could pinpoint where they live to within a few streets. And that complicated jumble of place classifications and local tax structures is the administrative essence of the United States on a local level. In a time when it's so easy to focus on our national narrative, I think it's important from time to time to remind ourselves that here on the ground of the longest-standing democracy in human history, it's a pretty bizarre place. And that is in part because we are working within a decentralized framework largely developed 250 years ago. We have a dozen different classifications of boroughs because people on one side of the country in the mid-1800s had no idea how people on the other side of the country were coming up with local administrative divisions. So they came up with their own system, and they made it work. And for all the headaches that I'm sure these widely disparate classification systems have caused people throughout the centuries, I think these quirks are also part of the American identity. These differing nomenclatures and districting methods across different regions speak to rich local histories and the drive of small communities to make their mark on the American experiment. Plus, for better or for worse, we're stuck with it now.
That is WJFF's Blake Johansen with his podcast, Close to Home. You can hear it on WJFFradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. He is a self-described policy wonk. Did you figure that out? He loves this stuff, and we love that he loves it, because I didn't know that about a hamlet until now. Thank you, Leif. And you can hear the rest of that episode and other episodes on the website, WJFFradio.org. You can also donate there or call 845-482-4141 as we end our summer fun drive. We heard from Anonymous just now in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for your donation, helping us take part of that challenge away. We have a $250 challenge on the table. We're on our way. We need a little bit more to meet that challenge and get that goal met later today to end the drive. And also Anonymous in PA said, doesn't know where to start with a comment. Love the programming. Love the variety. Loves the reporting and all the information that we're bringing to the Upper Delaware Valley. And, well, we're happy to do that. We love doing that. And if you love what Anonymous loves, show your support. 845-482-4141.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep from NPR News. More than a year ago, we changed everything about how we work so we could stay on the air for you, no matter what. We've kept all this going thanks to colleagues who never give up and listeners who keep giving what they can to support this service. We're there for you because you're here for us. Here's how to give to this station now.
Please go to wjffradio.org to help end the drive. Thanks.
I love turning the radio on when I'm in the car in the afternoon, and I just love the idea that it could be Ted or it could be some question somebody's asking. And maybe I need to get out of my own head. And it takes me to some place so I get into something else. And besides, it's a community thing. And there's nothing more exciting to me than a community being, well, caring about what's happening in the world.
If you're feeling the love, share the love. Go to WJFFradio.org to make your donation now.
Donate now at 845-482-4141. Show your love of public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. We have a challenge on the table, $250 we have to meet. We have a little, about $200 to go. So please call 845-482-4141. Help us meet that challenge. And we are ending our drive today, too. So anything you give will help us get that much closer to the end of the drive. 845-482-4141. Call now and show your support for the public radio station that you love, that you've been hearing people tell you that they love. Do you love it? Share the love. 845-482-4141 or go online, wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's a special Summer Fun Drive edition. And one of the things that we like to do on this show is bring you information and features about local arts organizations, arts events. And one of those is a really special one that's at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center this month. It is the New York City-based LeMay Ensemble. They have a performing and teaching residency during the month, presenting outdoor public artwork, workshops, and discussions that offer multiple opportunities to engage through embodied dialogue with the artists while they're in residency. I spoke with co-founder Hemina Garnica yesterday about LeMay and what they're all about.
Our company called LeMay, and it's a collaboration between my partner is a Japanese artist. His name is Chige Morilla, and I am actually Colombian born. And we both live in Brooklyn in the city. And then we work with a group of international and national dancers, performers. Here at the residency, I'm working with Masanori Asahara, who also was born in Japan, and Crystal Copper, who is from New Jersey. And we usually work in between the visual arts and the performing arts, meaning we make sometimes things that are kind of sculptural, installation-based work, space-based work, and then we also make pieces for the stage, for dance, for theater, and these work that we are doing during this residency is at the intersection of the performing arts and also the visual arts. Now, the workshops are really based on our practice that we call Ludus, which is basically different ways to activate the imagination of each individual, regardless whether you are a dancer or no dancer. It's a way to sort of allowed ourselves to play and to move the body through different imageries, let go. And I think the experience that we had last week, this specific workshop, we focused on the unknown, and we did these explorations where people had to have partners and had to trust their stranger partner that they just had met that day, to move them around the park with their eyes closed, pulling through a stream. So that was quite an experience. You know, you have to close your eyes. You have to trust somebody that you just have met, and you're being pulled around a park in this stream, and the body gets sometimes jarred, and then there is moments where you finally break through that fear, and then all these amazing things start happening. And sometimes you get there sometimes a bit, and then sometimes you're like, oh, no, I'm going to fall. All these thoughts start coming. And then sometimes you find certain freedom and certain magic. And I think that dance do that. It allowed us to perceive the world and to see and perceive parts of us that usually we don't have a space for it in our quotidian life, in our work life, in our social life. So, yeah, last week was trying to carve a space so that as a community we can perceive the world in different ways that are not usually available to us in our daily life.
And with so much uncertainty in the world and so much unknown as there is, do you think that folks are more reticent to try these kinds of things of letting go through performance and things that you're doing? Or do you find that maybe folks are more willing to take a chance?
So I was always joking, and we always joke with our collaborators that maybe now that the world and a lot of our communities had experienced uncertainty in a massive way in this, at the same time that a lot of the work that we have been doing for many years has a new relevance, is less obscure, perhaps less weird, because we all, like, one way or another have been dealing with, you know, as they say, taking the carpet has been taken off the floor for us under our feet, and everything that we, you know, we are trying to anchor ourselves to find some sort of a stability suddenly has been taken from us. And then beyond even all the grief and all the human loss that we had had, there is also something that nature and the world is showing us, and the way of the rhythm of our lives is, has been so detached from the rhythm of nature and the rhythm of the environment outside the human life. So I think we, in different ways, people are facing the pandemic with different reflections. And but I do think that hopefully this kind of work has a bigger crack, and people might feel more connected than maybe, you know, before the pandemic. I would think of that, at least the perception I've been having since we started presenting the work in October last year.
And I just want to ask you about correspondences. That's the next event, and that will be engagement of the audiences through conversation, sharing responses. Tell us a little bit more about correspondences and how you engage and interact with audience there.
Sure. So the piece itself is these three chambers. We call it chambers. There are these cases of plexiglass where three performers are inside each of them, and it has a mechanism of sound that gets activated at certain times and create a quicksand effect, and the performers are trying to rise all the time, but then the floor under their feet kind of erupts, and then it causes them to collapse, and then again they're trying to rise, and then again they collapse. And it just goes on, so people can, you know, if they're just walking by, they can just stay there for a minute, 2 minutes, or they can watch the whole score. It's like 35 minutes long, and then we have to get out of there and breathe some fresh air to be able to come back in.
Yeah.
And then, meantime, we have an online platform called the Correspondence Audience Files, which are like in a website called correspondencesfiles.lamey.org. And there we're asking people to answer one of five questions. And the questions are things like, how do you cope with uncertainty? Or what happened when your body encountered the unknown? Or things like, what are your thoughts about environmental ethics? And then people can just, any of you listening today or your team can just go online and answer the question. We are compiling all these answers into an archive, like a memory archive of all the places where correspondents have been and will be presented. And then at the same time, if you get to go to see the piece on the site, you could take photos if you want, and you could also upload those images to the audience files, and we are sharing that as a larger audience database.
And are all the workshops bilingual? Is that right?
Yes, yes. Like I said earlier, I am, well, bilingual meaning in English and Spanish. I am Colombian, so, and I know that there is a community of Latinx people in the county. So, sí, los talleres también van a ser en español y espero que puedan venir y acompañarnos y explorar y experimentar un poco con nosotros.
Thank you. And
that was an invitation in Spanish.
Yes. I thank you for that. Is there anything else you want to tell us about the residency before we go?
Yeah, I think Saturday you can come, like, be there for the full 35 minutes, and then we have this little 10-minute workshop that you can bring your husband or your wife or your dear one or your kids. Like, in the workshop last week, it was really beautiful. We had couples that left their kids with a babysitter that night and came to the workshop. But you can bring your kids to these too. So, yeah, thank you. And I hope you all come and experience and share some of this work with us.
Thank you for joining us and telling us all about it.
Cool. Thanks, Dean, for having me.
And the LeMay residency at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center today at 1 o'clock through 8 p.m. And you can find out more information about that at hurleyvilleartcenter.org. We are Radio Catskill. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're out in the community today, even though we still have the fun drive going on. We're out all over the place, and we're checking in now with Barb Demarest, volunteer, who's at the Rock Hill Farmers Market. Hi, Barb. How's everything in Rock Hill? Oh, I must have lost Barb. Okay. Well, we will check in with her again. I think we may have lost the signal, but we are in the middle of our summer fun drive, and we have a challenge on the table right now. It is a $250 challenge. We only have about $200 to go. If you can help support that, call 845-482-4141 or go online, wjffradio.org, make a donation. Help us get that challenge met and put into the tally for our goals today and for the drive. We're ending the drive today, and we can end it with your support. We just need to hear from you, 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania, and we will try to get Barb back on the line and check in with what's going on at Rock Hill. Call now, 845-482-4141.
Hi, I'm Becky Sullivan. I am a producer at NPR. When a host reports from places like Iran or North Korea or even right here in the U.S., people like me go with them. We brainstorm questions to ask, and we record lots of different sounds to help set the scene. I think the right sound does a lot to put you in a place to pull the listener in. It makes it more vivid. Nothing is ever going to replace actually going to where the news is happening and talking to the people it's happening to. I think that being in the field and hearing the sounds and the voices from the people who are actually living through the news, that's when my job feels the most important. That's when my job feels the most valuable. And it's not free. It would be cheaper to just stay at home and make phone calls. But the journalism that we can do when we're on the ground is better journalism. And your support makes it possible. So here's how to give, and thank you.
Go to wjffradio.org or call 845-482-4141.
Call now, 845-482-4141, or go to wjffradio.org and donate any amount. We've got Barb Demarest back. She's in Rock Hill at the Farmer's Market. Hi, Barb.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How's
it's
everything?
A beautiful day here.
How's everything in Rock Hill?
Yeah, we're talking to people who...
Oh, well...
And some, you know, we're new to the area, so telling them about what kind of programming we've got. It's a lovely day. Lots of great vendors here at the market. So if anyone's in the neighborhood, please stop by and see us.
Yeah, we've got the signal's a little jumpy here. We're losing you in little parts, but I understand you're talking to folks out there at the Rock Hill Farmers Market, which goes on today. How long does it go on till? Oh, well, we seem to have lost Barb on the signal again. That's all right.
Oh,
there you are. Hi.
At 1 o'clock, we're...
Okay, she's there till 1 o'clock with some of our volunteers. I know that Stephanie and Barbara and a few other folks, I think, are coming out today to help support, right?
Kevin, yes. Yes, indeed.
Great.
So we'll be looking forward to meeting listeners. We've got our new bumper stickers and tote bags and all that good stuff.
That's great. Down in Rock Hill at the Rock Hill Farmers Market, you can find the team out there telling you all about anything you wanted to know about Radio Catskill, also giving you a free bumper sticker or magnet, and we have those tote bags for a $10 donation. They're kind of cool. And you said you've been talking to folks already? How are
we
folks?
Have.
Yeah. What have you been saying? What have you been saying?
Well, lots of listeners, friends, and...
Well, we're having a little
trouble. Recently moved to the area.
Oh,
okay.
Well, we're still having a little trouble with the signal. That's okay, Barb. You enjoy the rest of the farmer's market. And if you're down that way, come say hi to the folks, the volunteers that are down there out in the community. Barb, thanks so much. And
Tim.
We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. So we are having some technical difficulties with that signal, but that's all right. We still get a chance to go down and talk in person at the Rock Hill Farmer's Market. Also know that there's some folks at the Morgan Outdoors today in Livingston Manor until about 3, I believe. So out in the community, keeping you connected and just hearing what you have to say and also giving you one of those free bumper stickers that are kind of cool. So call us if you can to help donate during our pledge drive. Our fund drive ends today. We are listener-supported public radio, so we do rely on your support. And we have a challenge on the line right now, a challenge on the table. It's $250. We have about $200 to go. So if you can meet any part of that, call 845-482-4141. Or you can donate at wjffradio.org. That's also where you can hear the podcasts that you heard today or other podcasts that we have, including Cooking in the Catskills with Brett August and, of course, Close to Home with Leif Johansson. And a few of our other programs are on there as well. Let's Talk Vets with Doug Sandberg and The Local Edition. If you miss any of those, you can hear that on our podcast page, wjffradio.org. Also, donate there, and you can become a sound supporter. If you become a sound supporter, a new sound supporter, we'll give you a ticket to the showing of Summer of Soul, which is at the Calicoon Theater this weekend. There's a matinee today at 2. There's one at 7:30 tonight, and I believe again tomorrow, same times. And tomorrow, a special matinee, we're going to have our own Janice Adams will be there after the show, after the airing of the movie, to talk about it, a talk back with Janice Adams. She has a connection to the Summer of Soul Festival, and we'll be talking about that, and you can go there and hear from our own Janice Adams. To become a sound supporter, a new sound supporter at $15 a month or more, get you that free ticket and free popcorn to that showing, or any of the showings, actually, through Monday the 16th. And if you're a current sound supporter, you just up your donation by $10 and you will also get that free ticket and free popcorn to Summer of Soul, that great documentary about the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival, which is on now at the Calicoon Theater. So join us, join the community of listeners, and join the people that love and support your public radio station for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania, Radio Catskill. Call now 845-482-4141. And support your public radio station. And this is a radio chat skill for the day. I'll still be around. In fact, I've got special guest star Donna Fellenberg coming up later at 11:30 for a live version of Catskill Character. But coming up next is Farm and Country with Rosie and her team. Support them. Support local journalism, local radio. Call 845-482-4141. Or go online, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, located in Harris and Calicoon, a member of the Garnet Health System, garnethealth.org. The River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, riverreporter.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. thecooperageproject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill Summer of Love Fund Drive is happening now. Think about why you love summer and how much you love having Radio Catskill. Then, don't keep it to yourself. If you're feeling the love, share the love. Give now at wjffradio.org. Thanks. Give now at wjffradio.org.
Call now 845-482-4141. Help us end the drive. We have a $250 challenge we're trying to meet, and we only have about $200 to go. So call. You can be part of taking that all off the table or a part of it. 845-482-4141. Whatever you can give, but we need to hear from you. Forecast today, partly sunny. There's a slight chance of thunderstorms this afternoon with highs in the lower 80s. Clear tonight, less humid with lows in the lower 50s. And tomorrow, sunny with highs in the upper 70s. Farm and Country is coming up next.
WJFF Jeffersonville, you're listening to Radio Catskill. Radio Catskill is here every day, offering the very best of public radio to your friends, neighbors, and you. Support news and information you can trust. Give today at WJFFradio.org.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.